Today we'll go over Nectar of Instruction, chapter 2 and 3, and then an Art and the Rithi. We'll start with that. So in the first chapter, the emphasis is given to engage the senses in Krishna's service under the directions of a spiritual guide, a spiritual master. And in this way, one will come to the platform of consciousness or knowledge. And when one comes to the platform of knowledge, then his life becomes perfect. Knowledge, of course, meaning Krishna consciousness. So in the second chapter, Atyahara Vyasa's Chapa Japa Nimagraha Jnana Sangasya Lodhyam Cha Shadbir Bhakti Vrnashati. So Prabhupada especially emphasizes in his commentary that one should not, that human life is meant for simple living and high thinking. Unfortunately, the goal of life in human society nowadays, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Chintyam Aparayam Cha Pralayam Dham Upashitya Kama Pavoga Paraman Edavam Iti Nishitya. That they believe that to gratify the senses until the end of life is the prime necessity of human civilization, and therefore there can be no measurement for their anxiety. So people don't believe in simple living and high thinking nowadays. First of all, they don't believe that there's anything high to think about except getting high. And as far as simple living, they think that that's a barbaric, as Prabhupada says, they're primitive. It's type of a primitive existence. They think that it's going back to the dark ages. So Prabhupada emphasizes the fact that one can engage this material energy, whatever energy we have, and engage that in Krishna's service. He quotes the verse, Anya bilasita shunyam jnana karma yaravritam anukulena krishna anushvilanam bhakti uttam. That one should act favorably for Krishna. And of course, in Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada's commentary, he emphasizes different things such as lowyam. He says that the mental speculation of the jnanis and the attempts for mystic powers by the yogis, this can all be fit into the category of the fruit of activities, endeavors by the karmis. This can all be put into the category of lowyam. The actual goal of life is to come to the platform of pure devotional service, where one can meditate upon Krishna in trance and enter into Krishna's transcendental pastime. So anything except for that, that's considered to be an impediment to Krishna consciousness, as if it anavritam, if it covers pure devotional service. That is karma, gyan, yoga. If they cover devotional service by, for instance, here Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada said, by loya, by becoming greedy for these achievements, people think that if I get these achievements, if I get, they used to have this program on television, it was called The Millionaire, where there was Mr. Tipton, he'd give away $1 million. Because $1 million is not, used to be a lot more than it is now. And then they watch the person and see what happens. And invariably his life would become a disaster after receiving $1 million. That a person who was formerly peaceful, living a happy life, would suddenly be confronted with too much money. He wouldn't know what to do with it. And you could do the wrong thing. So people are thinking that somehow or another, that by some further results, I'll become happy. Otherwise, why do people work so hard? They're thinking, let me make as much money as possible, and then I can buy as much toys as possible for my child. And that way, keep him happy. And of course, if you look at the toys nowadays, there's a, what do they call it, AK-47, yeah. You can get him a genuine hand grenade. let him practice throwing it at his neighbor. You know, a genuine automatic rifle. And then buying a television set, etc. So all these things, they usually cause simply problems. Just like one, I mean, these examples are extreme, but just like one little boy, he got into a quarrel. He was, I think, 7 or 8 years old. He got into a quarrel with his neighbor, so he took his father's rifle and shot his neighbor's little girl. And they asked him, why did you do it? He said, because that's what they do on television. It's just normal. Yeah, that's what you do. So this is modern advancement the wrong way. And greed, loyalty. So one has to become convinced that by meditating upon Krishna in the spiritual world, in other words, by hearing Krishna's activities, his name, form, qualities, pastimes, both in this material world, because this is also one of Krishna's pastimes, and by seeing Krishna's, hearing about Krishna's activities in the spiritual world, that by meditating both internally and externally upon Krishna, that all one's desires will automatically be satisfied. That one will merge into the ocean of spiritual pleasure. And anything that takes one away from that, that's considered to be vinashati, destructive towards pure devotional service. Any questions about this? I'm just summarizing. So he mentions atyahara, collecting too much, or just like the capitalists or the communists, he was saying, that they suffer from false proprietorship, collecting too much. They don't actually know what to do with their energy. They don't know that it's actually supposed to be engaged in Krishna service, therefore they try to exploit it, and the result is they become entangled in it. And then the next verse, Utsaha Nishaya Darya Tat Tat Karma Pravartana Sangha Tyaga Sito Vite Shadvira Bhakti Vinashiti Prasidite. That enthusiasm, Utsaha Nishaya Darya, enthusiasm, confidence, patience, following the regular principles of devotional service, following the precepts of the previous acharyas, authorities, and association with devotees, who are giving up non-devotee association. These are conducive to the development of devotional service. So this is, we've heard in the scriptures, that there are 6 stages of sharanagati, of surrender, beginning with accepting everything that's necessary for the advancement of devotional service and giving up that which is an impediment towards devotional service. So in the same way, Rupa Goswami is giving us the positive side. And here he says the first thing is utsaha. Utsaha, enthusiasm. And how does he define enthusiasm? What is his definition of enthusiasm? Yes, I got him.
Endeavoring with intelligence.
Endeavor executed with intelligence.
Right,
that's good. So endeavors executed with Krishna conscious intelligence. Conscious order intelligence. And Prabhupada says that, I was reading somewhere, I forget where I read it, it says that wherever the devoted someone performs activities enthusiastically, then the goddess of fortune is there, gives her blessings. Enthusiasm is actually, in the material world at least, it's the counterpart of one of Krishna's energies, the pleasure potency. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Prabhupada used to say that if someone has life, then they can preach. Because if you're preaching about pure devotional service and the bliss potency, and you're going, yeah, it's really great. So enthusiastic. I really am bliss. You know, take one of these books. You know, I'm in anxiety. I don't know why I'm out here, but you keep it with you, and you know, I'm sure you'll experience a lot of pleasure, but as for me, I don't know why I'm not here. So, enthusiasm is part of the pleasure potency. So everyone is looking for pleasure. Everyone's endeavor, even the person Even the attempt to escape misery is simply an indirect attempt to attain pleasure. And the next one is Utsaha Nishchaya. Nishchaya. How do you spell it? C-A-R? C-A-Y.
C-Y? C-A-Y.
C-A-Y. Nishchaya. So, Utsaha Nishchaya Darya. So this is, must be confidence. So the confidence is the product of development of faith, and not blind faith, but real faith in Krishna consciousness. So what is confidence the product of? Knowledge. You can't be confident in something unless you know it, you experience it, you're familiar with it. So in the material world, Prabhupada says that what mode of nature does knowledge come from? Passion, ignorance, or goodness. You don't know what mode of nature knowledge arises from? Goodness. So knowledge is the product of goodness. So only one who's actually in goodness can actually be confident. Although they have books, and if you want to sell something, they have books telling you should act confidently. Because who is going to want to buy something from you unless you were confident that it worked? Then not only it works for you, but it's going to work for the other person too. If you went up to say, here, take one of these, and they go, well, what is it going to do for you, for me? You go, I don't really know, I'm not really sure. But I know it'll do a lot for me if you give me the money. So when confidence comes out of knowledge, someone has to be convinced that by following the instructions of the spiritual master in Krishna, then one's desires will actually be fulfilled. If one is hesitant, that's a product of lack of awareness or realization. Not that hesitancy is bad. Hesitancy is a product or doubt in the beginning, as we've heard in the Bhagavad Gita class, that doubt is a product of intelligence in the beginning. But doubt should encourage one to get free from the doubt by investigation. But if simply someone is doubting, he's spending his whole life doubting, then he's just wasting his time. If he simply goes from one doubt to another doubt. One time I heard one tape Prabhupada was saying that Nuri was asking, what about skeptics, Prabhupada? How do we deal with them? And Prabhupada said, we won't deal with them. He's got skepticism, nonsensicism or something. Because if someone's simply spending his whole life doubting, then what is the point? That human form of life is meant for inquiry. To doubt is good at the beginning, but then we should try to become free from our doubts by investigation. And that should lead one to knowledge. And knowledge should bring one to the state of being confident. And Darya, Nishchaya Darya. Is it an I in there somewhere? Or is it first A in there? Darya. So this is patience. What transcendental energy is patience arisen from? Can anyone guess? From what energy of Krishna will we become patient? Transcendental? Well, this is like Ladini Shakti. This is Samvit, knowledge. Bliss, knowledge, and eternity. So this is the eternity. That when one realizes that he's eternal and he has the eternal relation with Krishna, then he can be very patient. Because in any situation, if he knows how to serve Krishna, then he can be completely patient. One who doesn't know he's not the body, he doesn't know he has an eternal relationship with Krishna, that he can serve Krishna in any circumstance, then how can he be patient? So devotional service is advanced by developing bliss, knowledge, and eternality, by becoming enthusiastic, by becoming patient, by becoming confident. You have shown us enough?
Patience comes from the Lord's quality of eternality. Confidence comes from the Lord's quality of knowledge. Does that mean that what's the heart comes from the Lord's quality of bliss?
No. Yeah, of course.
Yes, it does.
It's pretty hard to be enthusiastic and be depressed. Similarly, it would be very hard to be confident, be very confident about something if you're in ignorance. I'm completely convinced that, you know, but I know nothing about it. Similarly, it would be very hard to be patient unless you knew you were eternal and that you had an eternal relationship with Krishna. So the karmis, they try to artificially develop these qualities, but it's just more or less a show. Yes.
Well, I think one can be convinced about Prabhupada and what he's doing, but might not have so much knowledge about the philosophical understanding. And maybe the main thing, but not too deep.
How can you, then you'll be convinced, but not too deeply.
By Prabhupada.
Yeah, but in other words, you'll have faith. That's the difference between blind following an actual realization. Mm-hmm. In other words, that a sentiment, because everyone else is going Prabhupada, 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 we may also go Prabhupada, Prabhupada, Prabhupada. But as far as our actual conviction, that will be tested in times of difficulty. When everything is going nice, we can seem to be convinced, but then that has to be tested, how much we're really convinced, how deep it is. Anything else about this point? So we want to develop enthusiasm, patience, and confidence. So that's the process of devotional service. To gain knowledge, especially if it begins with knowledge, understanding of how to become enthusiastic and patient. First, so we're trying to gain knowledge, that's what the whole point is, where to place our enthusiasm. So it increases, and at the same time, our patience. That we have to be, Prabhupada writes that in the beginning of the Krishna consciousness movement, I started out by myself, and there was no help, but I executed this endeavor with patience, and therefore the result is coming. And now it's expanding all over the world. So if we have knowledge, then we can learn to be patient. By patiently developing our enthusiasm, we can come to the goal of life. And how to patiently what knowledge? Tat tat karma pravartana. We have to become convinced that by following these nine processes of devotional service, by remaining faithful to them, by following them patiently and with enthusiasm, we'll come to the goal of life. And how to do that? Sitovrite, following the footsteps of the previous acharyas, and avoiding the association of those, anything that will take us away from those nine processes of devotional service. As Prabhupada writes at the end, anything executed except for these nine processes of devotional service is a fall down, and therefore we should be careful to avoid fall downs. Any questions about this? And out of all these different, put a plug in for both situations. Out of all these different, of all the services that we have, generally our attempts to distribute Krishna consciousness by preaching is the service that lends itself most to developing both patience and confidence and enthusiasm. It gives us practical feedback how confident we are, how enthusiastic we are. And out of the three, the one that's most appreciable to develop is enthusiasm. Of course, no one can remain enthusiastic for a long period of time unless he's also in knowledge, unless he has confidence and patience. But if one is enthusiastic, then automatically these other things should follow. If he's actually really enthusiastic, utilizing his intelligence in Krishna consciousness. Do you find that what sells the most books, Govinda Bhashya? What sells the most books?
Enthusiasm.
Yeah, if you go up to someone and say, here, take one of these, and they go, at least they'll be a little interested about it.
Yeah, really?
So developing enthusiasm on book distribution is a natural thing, because you have to be enthusiastic if you want to do anything. I remember when I first went out, when we used to go out in Houston, Texas, 1970, distributing books, I used to watch the Jehovah's Witnesses were distributing books along with us. And their technique was to hold a book like that. They just hold it in front of them. Needless to say, they didn't distribute so many. But the devotee is this, sir, excuse me. A little enthusiasm and also confidence, because people are doubtful. But if one is convinced, then automatically people will become interested. They want to find out, what is this person so convinced about? Because everyone is walking around in doubt. What is my wife doing today? Why am I doing this work? How many drugs do my kids take today? Everyone's in doubt, practically the whole life. You know, what war is going on? What deadly disease is being spread? Everyone's in doubt whether they're going to live the next moment or not. But if someone's convinced about something, if one is actually certain, then people will become attracted. What to speak of patient? Because everyone's in anxiety about what's going to happen the next moment. Everyone is rushing towards something, the next thing, whatever it is. People work hard to get their paycheck, so they're not really working hard because they enjoy their job mostly, because they're looking forward to get their paycheck. And when they get their paycheck, then they go to the movies and they watch the movie. So that these automatically come by full engagement in devotional service. Tat tat karma pravartana. Understanding that these are the things we're supposed to develop. But if someone gives me some service to do, and immediately I start doubting, you know, who is this person? Why is he telling me to do it? Why doesn't he do it himself? Because he doesn't want to do it. That's why he gave it to me to do it. And you think, if I got to do it, if they're not going to give me any food here unless I do it, then I guess I got to do it. But I'm not going to do it enthusiastically. I'm going to do it as slow as possible. So such devotional service will take a long, long time to fructify, to come to the platform of love for Krishna. So Rupa Goswami is advising us to follow these, to execute our services with enthusiasm, confidence, and patience, etc. Are there any questions about this? Yes.
In the purport, there's something about the cause of the following service. It says, when by good fortune one comes in contact with pure devotee, that seems to have a material cause, like by his activity or something.
Good fortune? Yeah. Well, what is that good fortune? There may be many bases of the good fortune of coming in contact with the pure devotee. Krishna says, Yesha mandikatam papam jananam punyakaramanam te dvandva mohinir mukva bhujante mam jada vrataha. From the person's point of view, well, first of all, let's examine. Oh, pure devotee, you come in contact with the pure devotee only by the mercy of Krishna. Because Krishna is sending the pure devotee. That the pure devotee's activities are non-different from the manifested activities of Krishna within this world. So Krishna is giving his mercy, he's sending out his pure devotees, his representatives, in order to give people the opportunity. But whether or not we take up that opportunity will depend upon our desire to do so. So certainly pious activities, if we perform pious activities in this lifetime and in previous lifetimes, is certainly a better, more conducive for taking advantage of the presence of the pure devotee. Prabhupada writes, to those who are too deceitful, who are foolish, who are what is the other ones? Well, it corresponds to the four different the mudha, who's foolish, Naradama, who has so-called system of religion, but he doesn't actually know what the purpose is, to the Mayaprita Jnanas, those who are deceitful, whose knowledge is stolen by illusion. They can't actually take advantage very easily of the pure devotee. So we may consider them unfortunate in the sense that they, because they have no previous pious activities, they're not at all attracted to the association of pure devotee. But those who follow the scriptural injunctions will become a little purified at heart. They might be able to appreciate more the activities and qualities and what the pure devotee has to offer. So that good fortune, ultimately it depends upon Krishna, but it also depends upon the willingness of the soul to accept this good fortune. Just like this Krishna's advent in himself is this Hare Krishna movement, and there are thousands of devotees going all over the world trying to distribute Krishna consciousness, but not everyone's equally liable to take it. Any other questions about this?
I don't know if this is referring to the same hive that the Buddha is talking about, but on page 4, in that instruction, it says, one can be gradually elevated to the standard of real knowledge of Krishna consciousness by practicing austerity and celibacy, voluntary, by controlling the mind, by controlling the senses, by giving up one's possessions in charity, by being avowedly truthful, by keeping clean, and by practicing yoga sannyas. However, if one is fortunate enough to get association with pure devotee, he can easily surpass all the practices for controlling the mind by the mystic yoga process. So, the first part seems to indicate that one can come to the standard of real knowledge of Krishna consciousness just by performing these processes. Or is it inferred that one has to have the association with pure devotee in addition to these?
Well, one can come by practicing these by themselves, one will come to the platform of liberation. And after liberation, then one can start the process of devotional service. But in any case, without the guidance of others, how will one know? One always has to be guided either by Brahmins or by yogis or someone. One always needs a guide. You always need the guide. Guru Sadhana Shastra there. In every sphere of life. But as far as a pure devotee who is actually 100% Krishna conscious, that's those who are practicing the other paths, the indirect path. Generally, they're not practicing under the guidance of a pure devotee.
Yeah. But in there, to elevate themselves in the different processes, they may understand that they do need a tinge of devotional service, even though.
Yeah, without devotional service, everything is based on devotional service. Even the demigod worship, they're always chanting Om, which is directly addressing Krishna. See, everything depends upon devotional service for its success. As we were reading, that with bhakti, karma, jnana, and yoga, they're dependent upon bhakti for their success. You can't, just like if you're practicing yoga and you were bored stiff, you just probably said, I go to the bank of the Ganges and I see all these yogis, they'd be sitting in yoga posture and doing their pranayama. So, unless you were a little enthusiastic, then how are you going to practice? And unless you, karma, jnana, yoga, people become enthusiastic because the goal is indirectly Krishna conscious. To merge into Krishna's effulgence or become Paramatma yourself. And that they're actually striving to some aspect of Krishna consciousness. And their success depends upon their knowledge, their enthusiasm, and their patience. So in every sphere of Krishna consciousness, bliss, knowledge, eternality play their role. But it's just to a smaller degree. In karma, a little bit more in jnana, a little bit more in yoga. And it's really fully manifested in bhakti. But without bliss, knowledge, and eternity, then why would anyone do anything? Here, take this pill and it'll make you miserable. even the karmis, they tell you, take this, and you'll become completely aware of everything. Read this newspaper, become aware of everything. Or take this product, put this underarm deodorant underneath your arm, and you'll smell so nice that everyone will surrender to you. And you'll be able to enjoy unlimited happiness. Isn't that what they promise? So even the karmis, they promise that. Of course, they can't deliver it, but they promise like that. You know, yes.
Sometimes, Maharaj, we may experience some dryness. You know, we might not be experiencing such a taste. So I agree, we may be enthusiastic.
See, therefore, the first platform is knowledge. Hearing. In other words, we have to understand with our intelligence things as they are, and then try to progress towards being enthusiastic. Although enthusiasm can't be artificially... we can't be artificially enthusiastic in the sense that we can try and be enthusiastic, but we can't be any more enthusiastic than we can try to be. But we should endeavor with intelligence, knowing what to discriminate. What's the proper thing to do that will increase my enthusiasm rather than decrease it even further? And then, therefore, we have to engage with knowledge patiently, knowing, being convinced that I'm Krishna's eternal servant. And if we engage in those activities, then try to be enthusiastic. Then Krishna will help. When Krishna sees the endeavor of the soul, then he helps. Krishna helps those who try to do something. It's not that we only have a certain amount of experience of Vajini Shakti, which is the pleasure potency of Krishna, which creates our enthusiasm. So, that can't be we can't artificially demand that Krishna give us more, but we can try and endeavor in such a way as that Krishna becomes pleased to give us more. Anything else? So now, anartha vritti. There are four types of anarthas. Those arising from previous pious activities. Those arising from impious activities, which are under the category of the five kleshas. Those which arise from aparadhas. And those which are bhakti, imperfectly performed. So in the Anishtada Bhajna Kriya, the emphasis is on whether you're going to engage in devotional service or not. The emphasis on this, these are impediments that prevent us from fully realizing what actually is devotional service, the taste of devotional service. And out of these four, Śrīla Viśvanātha Chakravarti Thakura, he deals mostly with the aparadhas. He says that pious activities and impious activities, they can be grouped as more or less one because they keep one within the material world. The five kleshas and bhakti and mukti, material sense, enjoyment, and liberation. Both of these, they keep one in bodily conception of life. So whether one comes back, whether one performs pious activities or impious activities, the result will be the same in the sense that one will get another material body. And he deals with aparadhas because especially he says that there are different types of aparadhas. The seva aparadha and nama aparadha he mentions. Of course there are others such as dama aparadha. So many different types of aparadha. But he deals mostly with nama aparadha. He says that seva aparadha is not such an important issue. He says out of the 64 aparadhas, or the 32 major ones, He said that these can be mitigated very easily just by the practice of devotional service. Just by chanting some mantras, stotras, that one will be relieved of the effects of seva aparad. He said, of course, if seva aparad, if you think that what seva aparad is not so important, and therefore I can commit seva aparad and chant a few mantras, then the seva aparad turns into nama aparad. That is committing sin on the strength of chanting. And according to scripture, if you the more you commit sin, and when you chant mantras that to take away your sin, and you do it and you sin purposely with and then chant mantras with the idea that they'll take away your sin, instead of taking away your sin, they increase the reaction. But generally, people don't commit seva aparad with the idea of thinking that they'll be excused. He does make a good point about that. The nama aparad he deals with, especially he deals with the first few aparads. What's the first offense he deals with? Sadhu-ninda. And what is the remedy? And what is the remedy for sadhu ninda? First of all, what is sadhu ninda? Who is the sadhu? No one knows who's the sadhu. It'd be very hard to avoid committing sadhu ninda if you don't even know. Who's the sadhu? Let's say it.
Devotee.
What kind of devotee?
Any kind of devotee.
Is all right. Do you have anyone can add to that? That's good. Indu Lathar.
One who can differentiate between the body and the soul.
He's a devotee.
He's a sadhu.
One who can? No, I don't think so. After all, what about a jnani? He can differentiate between the body and the soul. Is he necessarily a devotee?
No, he's a sadhu, isn't he?
Is he? Well, maybe, I guess around here they call him a sadhu. Is he a sadhu, Raghavir? And simply differentiate between the body and the soul?
Not in this context.
Not in this context. What is, in this context?
Well, there are 26 qualities of a devotee. Like humility and tolerance and so on. One of them is attached to Krishna. So that is described as being the essential quality. But as long as the devotee has that quality out of the 26, that one, he's considered a devotee, even if he's quite lacking in the other. He may not be very humble, he may not be very poetic. His senses may not be extremely well controlled.
He has some attachment to Krishna. Yeah, I mean, we do consider a sadhu as someone who's on some kind of spiritual path, but ultimately we're fanatics. Prabhupada once said in a lecture, he said that they say that they're good, everyone is saying that they're good, but we say that you're all bad, that only we're good. Because anyone who's actually not attached to Krishna, one who doesn't recognize that Krishna is the proprietor of everything, who doesn't realize that actually everything should be done for Krishna, then he's a thief. One who doesn't realize that Krishna is the real benefactor of everyone. One who thinks that this belongs to me, or that this is coming from me, then he's more or less a cheater and a thief. So he can't, cheaters and thieves can't be called sadhus. So only the one who's attached to Krishna to some degree, he can be considered a sadhu. And the other definition is true also. What was your definition?
Any kind of devotee. Or any
some kind of devotee. Devotee of Krishna. We're just saying the same thing, though. Of course, we have to be a little more discriminating in one sense. Would we consider the sahajis, sadhus? Raghav?
Prabhupada, would we consider the Sahajya Sadhus?
It depends.
He's a nice Sahajya.
To an extent, but they wouldn't fit in very well, generally.
The vowels, Adivekas, Gauranga Nagaris. Actually, those type of sadhus, they're, sahajiyas, sometimes they're actually against the principles of devotional service, so it
depends.
That's Atma's root.
You mentioned here that they surrender to the Lord.
Well, they take to sahajiyas.
They take to the process of surrender. The real process is surrender. So they're on the path of surrender. Because these things have to be understood. We find in the Harinam Chintamani that sometimes people consider the Mayavadis as sadhus. And if someone criticizes the Mayavadi, just like I remember Prabhupada sometimes when he would be lecturing in India, he would be they'd have all these Mayavadis on the stage. And Prabhupada would get, and they'd all say, it's all one, we're so happy that we're all here today. It's so nice that we're all friendly. You know, this is the real spiritual life where everyone agrees. And Prabhupada would get up and be like, these guys are all nonsense. they're all rascals and fools. If you say, oh boy, he's not a sadhu. So we have to understand that sadhu, who's actually a sadhu? Because, and what is this, what is a sadhu? Because criticizing a Mayavadi doesn't mean that you're criticizing a sadhu. Because we don't hate the sinner, we hate the sin. But we don't consider Mayavadi sadhus, and therefore to criticize their philosophy and what they're doing, that's part of our philosophy. But so once we understand who a sadhu is, then we have to understand what is sadhu ninja. To what kind of who, if you offend a devotee who's not very advanced, is that sadhu ninja? How many devotees think it's sadhu ninja if you offend a devotee who's not so advanced? Did you have some question about that?
Yeah, how about Christians and other religions?
Well, we don't, what about them?
Yeah, are they also sadhus? I mean, not the general, but more serious.
Yeah, they could be on the proper path of bhakti to some degree. But it would be stretching the term because, they could be on the path, but it's not very usual you find a Christian who takes Christianity very seriously. But it's possible. So, anyone who's on the path, who's a sincere devotee of Krishna, trying to surrender to Krishna, although he may not be very advanced, would be considered a sadhu. So if one commits an offense against them, then what should one do? Atmasru?
Beg forgiveness.
Beg forgiveness. So, how many devotees here have committed offenses against devotees within the last 5 years? How many devotees have begged forgiveness from that devotee within the last 5 years? How many devotees have committed offenses where they didn't beg forgiveness? So, maybe we should make a list after reading this instruction. Get out of our computers. Sent a lot of letters of apology.
And so beg forgiveness. What else? Anything else? Yeah, that's always a good idea. Bhakti and Tracy?
Render service.
Yeah, offer to render service. As they say, as my mother used to tell me, talk is cheap. You know, on one hand you're begging forgiveness, and the other hand, with your foot, you're kicking him in the side. So render some service, do something favorable. And also, beg forgiveness includes like something like fall at his feet, offer obeisances. Offer obeisances. And what? And anything else? Yeah.
Offer some praise.
Yeah, that would be all right, but.
Use some gift.
Excuse me.
Offer a gift.
Yeah, of course. That's all. That might all be under rendered services. You know, praise is all right, but. So there may be more things, but those are the major things. They're all. And then what happens if the sadhu says, hit the road? You've offended me, but.
And then he's not a sadhu, because sadhu's always forgiving, right?
Maybe. I mean, tell that to Draupadi. Say Draupadi decided that, you know, you've just killed my six sons, that you should be killed. If Vishnu Rita Muni came before him and said, oh, please forgive me, you know. Here's a box of chocolates. Oh, well, thanks a lot. There may be limits sometimes. But in general, most offenses are not of that nature. So, what's the first thing? If the sadhu doesn't forgive you, what should you do? Mother, in your life?
Would you give him some time and then approach him at a later date and beg forgiveness again?
Yeah, you could do that. But what are you going to do in the meantime? Chan Hari Krishna. Chan Hari Krishna.
Yeah.
Chan Hari Krishna.
There's a description in the handout of the family, I think. Right. You should chant Hare Krishna 24 hours a day.
Continuously take shelter of Harinam. So one can, of course, one can try and ask forgiveness later on also. But immediately, if the sadhu won't forgive, even after trying to offer all kinds of services, etc., falling at his feet, begging forgiveness, then one should give up everything and take to continuous Harinam. Take shelter of the holy name. And after a while, the holy name will give one shelter. Any questions about this? So yes, this is important.
Sorry, it's not my point. Is that, I take it that's an instruction one should take literally. In other words, taking continuous shelter of the holy name.
Yeah, of course.
Even like to the exclusion of other kinds of service?
Well, it depends on how serious the offense is. You know, if you walk by a boat and you step on his foot, yeah, and he said, I'll never forgive you for that. You abandon your responsibilities as a temple president and move to Mayapur. That might be a little. Yeah, one has to use his intelligence. What's the gravity of the offense? I mean, Krishna is in our heart, so therefore he gives one. As it says also, that I think in our book, in the Madhurya Kandambini, that offenses are perceived, the presence of offenses are perceived by the lack of advancement by chanting the holy name, the amount of spiritual bliss one is experiencing while he's chanting the holy name. So So the presence of offenses are experienced like that. So if you chant the holy name, you know, you do your best you can to avoid offending the devotees, and inadvertently you offend a devotee, and he won't accept your forgiveness, then, you know, you just have to go on chanting the holy name. It's a question of intelligence. That's true.
One does have to give some punishment.
Excuse me?
What should be done if there's have to give some punishment?
Oh, well, according to Krishna, that if the Brahmin comes and even cuts you with a knife, you should smile at him. That's in the story of King Nariga. He says that never take the property of a Brahmin or a Vaishnava. But even if he comes and tries to burn you or cut you with a knife, you should simply, you know, offer him respect and smile at him. So if the sadhu gives, if he's a real sadhu and he's trying to give you some punishment, you know, it depends what the punishment. I mean, it's not like, you know, if it's something reasonable.
No, I mean, one must humbly accept the punishment.
Yeah, of course. You know, if you're a spiritual master, you know, after you do something, you disobey his orders and he tells you not to eat any sweets, and you go, well, that's going too far. Don't eat sweets for a week, and you go, I'm sorry, you know. I don't know, you may be the spiritual master, like, you know, that's too much. What else are you supposed to do? And if he comes with a stick and he starts beating with it, he might want to run away or something. Yeah.
What we should do if we see that in our minds we start to be thinking in that way about other Vaishnavas?
Well, one thing you can do is think something nice about the other Vaishnavas. In other words, we can use our philosophy and try and analyze why am I thinking something bad about the other devotees, whether it's out of envy or whatever. So if we use our intelligence and try and examine it with philosophy, what our thoughts are, then we'll see whether they're reasonable, whether they're or not, whether they're beneficial for me, or whether they're not beneficial for me. So we have to use our intelligence and examine our thoughts. What else can we do? Pray to ask Krishna whether they're good or not. Come in, Bhakti.
The second to last paragraph on the first page has this means a person who takes shelter of devotional service suffers no loss of results, nor is he deprived of the goal, even if, knowing all the angles of background, he notably neglects to perform some of the secondary angles. Oh, could you give an example? I don't understand. Because in the next
There are some just like you may take to a certain type of service and not perform all the other activities of bhakti. For I was thinking that, or you may not go around Govardhan Hill, you may not go around Braj, but you're staying in the temple and just executing the services.
Yeah.
In other words, there are five principal devotional services that we perform: chanting the holy name, serving the deity, serving the Vaishnavas, hearing Srimad Bhagavatam, living in a holy place. So there are other angas of devotional service that are not as important. But if one simply takes shelter of the principal ones, that's sufficient.
Because in the next paragraph it says the 32 sevaparads, beginning with entering the temple while wearing shoes and other such sevaparads, should be understood to be offensive acts, so it should never be intentionally committed. So in the previous paragraph where it says missing out on secondary, it just means...
So, but that's not the same thing. In other words, there are 64 positive activities of devotional service, beginning with accepting a bona fide spiritual master. So those, there's out of the 64, five are prominent. But on the other hand, there's another list of sevaparads. We can't perform any sevaparad and get away with it. That's completely different. One is the positive activity, and the other is what we have to avoid, offenses.
Okay. proud of you. I was just... there's a list of persons who are very merciful. More, their mercy sort of overshadowed the offensiveness of the person, like Lord Nityananda with Jagannatha. But then there's mentions Chedi Maharaj, who was showed mercy to the atheist Bhaktis. I don't know who is this Chedi Maharaj.
I don't know that.
Well, Chedaraj is a position.
Yeah.
Someone who has a certain kingdom of Chedi. Just like Kasiraj. There's so many Kasiraj. But I don't know the two people who want to be talking about.
Does anyone else know?
Alright, we'll stop there. So tomorrow we'll finish Narada Nirriti. You can go on reading for the next one.